Brasco Liquor Control Commission. Mr. Dahlquist?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. You may approach, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel for the state, please note the appearance of Rodney Dahlquist on behalf of the appellant, A&S Inc., doing business as the 13th Street Brick House. And if I could, I'd please reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The thrust of this case is really twofold. The first issue is whether or not the state presented adequate, competent evidence of a knowing violation of the commission's order dated August 22, 2013.
What would be adequate in terms of a quantum of proof? What's the burden of proof on a case like this?
It would be the preponderance of the evidence.
Is there a case you can direct me to on that?
I don't believe I know it off the top of my head. I'm certainly would be happy to supplementally brief that if you would like, Judge, but I can't cite to it off the top of my head. No.
Thank you.
I would just cite to the general civil rules in a case such as this that it would be a preponderance of the evidence. However, at the hearing on the alleged violation, the state presented no definition for what the phrase daily operation of the bar means. That's the operative phrase here at issue that the state is alleging that A&S violated in this case. There was also no direct evidence that Mr. Krychek was involved in the daily operation of the bar, whatever that might mean, or firsthand testimony from any witness that said they saw him doing any of these alleged functions.
Is that a phrase that is normally used by the Liquor Commission? Does it have some precedent at all?
Not that I was able to find, Judge. Nothing specifically. So how I look at that phrase is really twofold. The commission could have certainly ordered that Mr. Krychek have no involvement in the operation of the bar. But the fact that they included the modifier daily, I believe, has to have some import. We ascribe meanings to words, and because they included that, it has to have some particular meaning.
Does that have anything to do with the fact that he owned the building and was a landlord to the bar? Does that have any impact?
It could. We don't necessarily have any information on what the commission was thinking at that time. The hearing at which the license was granted was not entered into the record, and I'm not privy to what occurred at that time.
So there's some evidence in this record that he fixed coolers or toilets or things of that nature when there was a problem with the bar.
Correct. And I don't believe that those would fall within the ambit of the prohibited activity.
Not a daily operation.
Not a daily operation of the bar. Certainly a daily operation of a landlord. I, being a landlord myself, certainly know that fixing toilets and going out to properties that you own when there are problems is certainly within the ambit and the orbit of what a landlord would typically do. But as far as operating the bar, there was nothing that would prohibit him from being on the premises itself at the time either. So not only was there nothing that gave an indication of what is prohibited as far as operation of the bar, I go back to the point where we're talking about daily. The fact that was included, I think, has to kind of prescribe the width of what is operation down to something that is done on a regular basis for the bar.
Would daily be synonymous with routinely?
Not in a purely strict technical sense, no, Your Honor. I think if they meant routinely, the commission certainly could have put that into the order. The fact that it says daily, I go back to, we ascribe meanings to words, and the fact that they put daily in there has to mean just what it says. They certainly
could. Something that has to happen every day.
Every day.
In common parlance, would we say, I go to work on a daily basis?
We certainly would. And certainly would, and for attorneys that might mean 7 days.
But might that also imply that we don't go every single day?
It could, in a sense of, and what we're kind of getting into is the thrust of the argument here. Daily might mean something to one person, might mean something totally different to another person. It might mean every single day, 365 days a year. It might mean 5 days a week, might mean 6 days a week. Unless we have some specific guidance on what that means, and particularly under the facts of this case, to justify a revocation, which is what we're talking about here, essentially what I call the death penalty for this business, a revocation of the license would be inappropriate.
That daily's not floating out there alone, though, right? It's daily operation of the bar.
Correct.
How does that inform us? So you don't necessarily go every day to fix a toilet, but you might go every day if you run a bar to collect money.
Well, you do, but the testimony and the evidence before the court is not that there was a daily, that there was not going to the bar on a daily basis to collect money. And specifically, we're talking about Mr. Krychek here at this point. I believe that the only competent evidence was that Ms. Crum was actually very candid and said, Mr. Krychek is my son. He's the landlord, he's my son. When I don't have time, I do ask him to go to the bank for me. Those are rare, and he has no interest in the bank account itself, and the only thing he does is actually...
So it's her position, he operates the bar, but just not daily?
Not within the record. Not within the record, and I don't
believe... But what's the significance of what that evidence, that admission was?
I think you're saying is the import, could that fall within the ambit of daily operation of the bar? Is that your question, Judge?
Well, perhaps she's taking the position it does not.
And that is the position that we have taken, is that infrequent requests of your son to run an errand for you do not fall within the operation of the bar prohibition. And how she views it is...
But if the court were to say that's operation of a bar, but just not daily...
That could be an interpretation, and because we don't have a particular definition that says running to the bank constitutes operation of a bar, I think the other kind of finer hair split here is going to the bank is operation for any business, regardless of what business you're running. Operation of a bar might have a more narrow definition: behind the bar, serving drinks, hiring staff, firing staff.
Since you brought up hiring and firing staff, I want to talk about Exhibit 6 for a minute. So Exhibit 6 was a series of text messages and Facebook posts from the son and involving all sorts of business operations. It was offered by the state, it was received by the hearing officer, and then it was withdrawn by the state. And the hearing officer didn't permit the withdrawal, didn't speak to it at all. So I want to know from you what you think about Exhibit 6. Is it part of our record? Is it in evidence or is it not?
I don't believe it is. And the reason for that is because it was withdrawn by the state. There was no opportunity for the...
It was withdrawn after it was offered. That's what I'd like you to focus on. Is there something in our jurisprudence that says a party... After they, if the evidence rules apply, and the court or the hearing officer receives an exhibit that someone can unilaterally, without the permission, then withdraw it. Is there something that says you can do that?
Boy, if there is, I would have cited it to the court, certainly. I guess I was operating in the presumption that because it had been withdrawn, and the hearing officer accepted the withdrawal, kind of consented to the withdrawal by the state at the hearing, and moved on from that withdrawal, that it was not part of the record.
So you understand the hearing officer to have consented to the withdrawal?
Based on kind of the back and forth between the attorneys and how that played out, yes.
Thank you.
Is Exhibit 6 demonstrative of your client's daily running of the bar?
I don't know if I can honestly answer the question because Exhibit 6 was never fleshed out at the hearing. We never actually got to address Exhibit 6 or the contents of Exhibit 6 or whether there's any veracity behind those allegations. The appellant in this case had requested the rules of evidence and received the rules of evidence. In order to adequately answer your question, and if I've dodged the question adequately, Judge, I think I would say we would have to have a sufficient opportunity at the hearing to address what that is, brief it to the district court, and then brief it before you today. I note that I have reached my time. If there are no further questions, I'd request to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Ms. Johnson-Wiles, good morning to you.
Good morning. court, counsel. Melissa Johnson Wiles, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Liquor Control Commission. I wanted to speak briefly about the standard of review in this case, because it is errors for error appearing on the record, to determine whether the district court's decision conforms to the law, is supported by competent evidence, and is neither arbitrary, capricious, nor unreasonable. The two issues that the appellant raises in its brief is whether the decision of the district court was supported by competent evidence, and then whether the decision, in our view, whether the decision to uphold the revocation of this license was arbitrary or unreasonable. So the first argument that they make is with respect to the competency of the evidence. And we would state to you that there was overwhelming competent evidence supporting the district court's decision. And the appellant is just attempting to try to chip away at that wealth of competent evidence by challenging certain evidentiary rulings by the district court, evidentiary determinations by the district court. One of them was the relevancy of a number of exhibits and also the authentication of exhibits 7 and 8. The relevancy and the authentication was within the district court's discretion to make those determinations. So you would review that for abuse of discretion. There was no abuse of discretion. The district court made independent findings of fact and conclusions of law and reached the conclusion that a violation did occur. I wanted to speak briefly about the discussion or the argument by the appellant with respect to the commission's order and the phrase daily operations of the bar. That was not addressed in our brief. The reason for that is that the appellant did not assign that as error. It was just argued, but not assigned. So we did not address that in our brief. We believe that the term daily operations, or the phrase daily operations of the bar, includes, as Justice Castle questioned counsel, is synonymous with routine items. And routine items would be things like ordering alcohol from the wholesalers, hiring, firing. You don't do all of those things every single day. Maybe you should be making bank deposits, cash bank deposits every day, but that is certainly something that would be routine. That was the intention of the commission, and as the district court found, Barbara Crum was present at that initial hearing where this restriction was placed. And she knew that that Kirk Krychek should have no involvement in the operation. So I'll move on after that. But so I wanted to speak a little bit about exhibit number 2, which is the photos of the documents found in the office, because there was a lot of discussion about the office in the hearing. The appellant challenges the exhibit 2 based on relevance, but there was evidence in the record that tied this office to Kirk Krychek. The investigators testified that during their criminal investigation, they got 5 warrants, safe deposit box, his home, which included vehicles, his office, laptop computer, and his cell phone. And then when they were executing the search warrant at the 13th Street Brick House for the office, Barbara Crum was present. Investigator Smoot stated to her, "We are here to perform a search of the office belonging to Kirk Krychek." Her answer was, "I don't know anything." She didn't say the office wasn't hers. She said, I don't know anything. She never did tell the investigators that the office was hers. And then she changed her story at the time of the hearing. And Kirk Krychek's laptop, which the investigators did have a warrant for, was found in the office at the Brick House. Then also in Exhibit 2, the picture of the items found in the office, there was a wholesale liquor invoice listing Kurt as the contact for the 13th Street Brick House. So there was a voluminous amount of evidence, in our opinion, to support this court's finding that the district court's decision was supported by competent evidence. It appears that the appellant is attempting to ask this court to reweigh the evidence and make its own independent factual finding, which of course would not be allowed. And then finally, I wanted to speak briefly about the revocation argument that this court should look and find that revocation was not appropriate. The appellant cites two cases in its brief regarding in support of their argument that this court can possibly impose a different sanction. But again, those two cases that were cited by the appellant, those were under a standard where the Supreme Court, conducting its review of the district court, was a de novo review. And the Supreme Court made its own findings at that time. That's not the case now. Instead, it's for, as we argue in our brief, errors appearing on the record and can only be overturned if the court finds that the decision of the district court in upholding the revocation was arbitrary. So that's all I have for prepared comments in case the court may have any questions.
Before you sit down, the regulation that forms the basis for the violation that supports the license
yes.
revocation, the regulation itself provides that willful failure or refusal by a licensee to comply with a specific written order will support revocation. Was there any finding of willfulness by either the Liquor Commission or the District Court?
What the finding was by the Liquor Commission is that Barbara Crum knew of the expectations of the restriction that was on the license and knew that Kirk Krychek should not be involved in the operations, daily operations of the bar, and violated that order. So it would be knowing and, I guess, by extension, willful. And then the district court made the same finding.
So you're saying it was willful is implicit in the reasoning of the
yes.
Liquor Commission and the district court?
Yes.
Thank you.
Questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 52 seconds, Mr. Dahlquist. Mr. Dahlquist, if we were to agree with your sort of suggestion that this is, that we don't know the definition of daily operation, what would you have this court do?
I think the appropriate remedy, Judge, would be to remand the case, certainly within the discretion to do, certainly within this court's authority to do so, I think the expert in this field is certainly the Liquor Commission itself, and this court has said that essentially, to find what constitutes operation of the bar. I think the underlying concern here, Judge, was that Mr. Krychek has criminal history, and that was flushed out at the hearing, and he's prohibited from participating in the operation of the bar because of that. And I'm out of time, but may I finish my
answer? You may finish that thought.
Thank you, Judge. If there are particularized concerns with his involvement with the bar, then those should be itemized or flushed out more specifically for a licensee, and in particular ANS in this case. It's impossible. So for example, if Ms. Crum has bar records and she needs to throw them away or have them shred because they have confidential information on it, can she give them to Mr. Krychek to have him take them down and have them shredded? I know that's getting quite far afoul of the facts of this case, but certainly the argument could be raised that constitutes operation of the bar, handling bar records and things of that nature. So we need something that's more particularized to address the concerns that the commission had at the time that the license was issued in order to give adequate notice to not only this licensee, but all licensees operating under a similar prohibition.
Is there any suggestion in the record that this licensee at the time that this imposition was made didn't have an understanding of what was being required?
Nothing in the record. No, I don't believe that there was anything that says that she did not know. I don't think there's anything that says she did know. And I think that the burden is squarely placed on the state to establish that she was aware that this operation of the bar prohibition is stretched very thin, and that it's not just something that falls very squarely within what common parlance would dictate.
And it strikes me from this record that she certainly knew that the Liquor Commission didn't want her son involved. Isn't that a fair reading of the record?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that that is an absolute fair reading of the record. She was aware that Mr. Krychek was not to be involved in the operation of the bar. There's no testimony, and I don't want to get too far afoul, and I understand I'm over my time, but there's no testimony that places Mr. Krychek in the bar, slanging beers or mixing drinks or hiring, or there's no competent evidence that establishes him. If, as the state and as Investigator Smoot testified, he suspected that Mr. Krychek has been operating this bar for years, where's the patron? Where's the disgruntled employee? Where's the liquor vendor that had been called as a witness to say, Mr. Krychek did this? We don't have any of that evidence in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next